Hello, welcome to the Hack Podcast. This is the Friday Shake-Up where people are chiming in with their views on the big stories of the week. Here's a taste of what's to come.
Hack. What do we want?
Live action!
What do we want? It now!
Darkening your face is always unacceptable.
I was surprised to hear that you had come down to the final two
on Triple J.
Yes, the Batchy, blackface in Canada, and climate strikes. Call in on any of those stories. Here's the number, 1300 055 36. Hanging out with you today is comedian Damien Power. Damien, how are you doing?
Wonderful, Tom. How are you?
Very well. Great to hear you're doing well. Jenna Clark is the assistant editor for the West Australian newspaper, coming at you from Perth. Jenna, how are you doing?
Hello, I'm great.
How were the protests in Perth?
They were surprisingly really big. We had a march here back in March, and we had 5,000. Today we had 10,000 storm the streets of Perth CBD, so it's a pretty great turnout.
Yeah, interesting. All right, let's get deeper into that right off the top.
There's thousands of people here. I want to say tens of thousands.
Man, you got to save this planet, one life.
On Triple J.
So according to organisers, the climate strike saw around 300,000 people on the streets today, which is huge. I mean, it's hard to be accurate with these numbers. In many cases, police estimates are around half that of the organisers. Either way, it's a huge amount of people hitting the streets in over 100 towns and cities around Australia. It makes it the biggest protest since the 2003 anti-Iraq war protests. They were, of course, inspired by Greta Thunberg, the 16-year-old Swede who started protesting last year. Let's hear how it went down today.
What do we want?
Climate action!
What do we want? It
now!
We're not going to stop until we see adequate climate action. That's all we're asking for. Adequate climate action and climate justice. Until this government does right by us, until our state governments do right by us, we will continue to take to the streets.
You can do it on Saturday. You can do it on Sunday. You can do it after school hours.
We've spent so much time protesting on the weekend. We've written letters to our MPs. We've signed petitions. We've done everything that we can. And as young people, we've just felt that we haven't been listened to. We don't really want to be striking. It's our last resort.
Are you here with the permission of your school?
Yes. We sort of had to just have a conversation with our principal talking about why we wanted to be here and why it's important.
They want to have their voice heard. They want to talk up about an issue that's going to affect them so much over the course of their life.
I would say to any student considering joining the so-called climate protest, don't be a sheep and think for yourself, because you are being used and manipulated and everything you are told is a lie.
On Triple J.
Craig Kelly, government MP there. Everything you're being told is a lie, according to him. I'd love to hear from you today. Did you protest? What did it mean to you? What was the message you wanted to send? I'd also love to hear your perspective. If you're in the coal industry, it's the industry the activists are calling for us to transition out of. What's your point of view on the climate strike? Maybe you support them. Give me a call, 1300 055 36. Jenna, what did you make of the pictures of hundreds of thousands of people protesting around Australia?
I absolutely loved it. I think it's just phenomenal to see these young people and not so young people just get out and make their voices heard. Because like the person that you just had in the grab there, you can write to your MPs, you can, you know, do things on weekends, but unless you cause actual chaos in the streets, organised chaos, that's the only way that these people in power are going to listen.
Damien, what was your reaction?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely fantastic. And I think it's interesting that it was sparked by children, because I think, you know, they have more idealism and passion and a hope for the future than probably a lot of us older people do, I think. So, yeah, I think it's great.
Tony, you're a coal miner. How do you feel about it?
Mate, I'm sort of against thermal coal. Like, as a coal miner, I think we should sort of work towards getting away from it. We still need coking coal, which is what they use to make steel. There's three ingredients to make steel: coking coal, iron ore, and limestone. So as far as coal mining goes for coking coal, like, we won't get away from it anytime soon. There are better energy sources out there as far as I'm concerned. Like, look at hydro, look at nuclear, and, you know, something that's sustainable sort of thing. So, yeah.
Right. So do you feel like, in a way, you were standing shoulder to shoulder with the protesters, or do you feel like opposed to them?
In between, because, like, a lot of them, I feel like look at all the facts that are out there sort of thing. Like, for example, a mine like Adani, I'm against it in some senses because it's a thermal coal mine. But, you know, that's going to provide power to a lot of people that are in a third world country don't have lights at the moment. And, like, we as a, well, the whole world, we've sort of had our time, like, working through that stage where we've got electricity and sort of boomed into a first world sort of countries where they're just trying to progress and sort of get it to the same level we are. So, you know, it's a tough call there.
Danielle, you're one of the organisers of the climate strike in Sydney. What's it like to hear that point of view from a coal miner?
Yeah, I think it's a really important point of view that definitely needs to be raised. I think right now we see too much of the onus on actually changing individual actions and actually looking at elusive ideologies, because I think the idea of climate justice is really elusive. What we really do need to be looking at is ensuring that we can have a just transition to sustainability that caters for these communities who are still not as developed as we are in Sydney, Australia, and also the communities in Australia that are reliant on fossil fuels.
Yeah, so the one of the calls was for support for a just transition. Are you mostly talking about, you know, communities in Australia that are reliant on the coal industry, or are you also talking about people in third world countries who are, I guess, just getting access to that kind of coal-fired power generation that we've benefited from for so long?
Yeah, so the demand is a call for a just transition and job creation for all fossil fuel workers, their communities and their families. And what that looks like is, of course, these communities that are reliant on coal within Australia, but also all over the world and in these countries that are only getting access to these fossil fuels now. I think something that we need to remember is that very often Australians can become complicit. It's easy enough for us to say, well, we are a small country. How can we actually make a difference? And first of all, you have the issue that Australia has the highest rate of carbon emissions per capita, but also the fact that we are an influential country. And by continuing to have the amount of carbon exports that we do and continuing to create more coal mines and refusing to have a just transition and a plan for these communities, we set harmful precedent for developing countries across the world.
Danielle, do you accept Tony's distinction there between thermal coal and coking coal? Do you accept that we will still need to mine coking coal to make steel?
Sorry, one second.
That's all good. I'll go back to Tony. Tony, what's it like to hear the protesters, I guess, as part of their demands, ask for, you know, support to transition communities like the one you live in? Does that give you much hope that they're, I guess, keeping your future in mind?
Yeah, I do like the idea of it, but honestly feel like it's not going to happen the way that it's, like, put it this way, during the recession, towns like Moranbah were pretty much wiped off the map. Like, people were just abandoning houses, like, because there was no support from the government then in the downturn sort of thing, where there's no demand for our coal. Like, if if this demand sort of disappears again, like, I can see a very similar thing happening. And like,
so you don't trust that the transition would really cushion the fall for you?
If they do it correctly, but, like, you know, put it this way, like, you've got kids that are leaving school, they got the opportunity to make $2,000 in the hand a week, like, straight out of school sort of thing, like, you know, over $150,000 a year they'll be earning. Like, I don't know if they'll sort of give these kids the same sort of opportunity to make that sort of money to get themselves set up in life. And, like, I'd love to see it. I really would, but
That's understandable, that perspective, you know, I guess having a good salary on the table in an area that might be hard to find work otherwise. But to a lot of people, it probably sounds a bit short-sighted.
Yeah, I can sort of see that. But a lot of people that get in the industry, they sort of come in with a plan for 5 to 10 years and they sort of get out, get what they can out of it. I think the Australian government should take a bit more out of the royalties and, like, put that towards climate change and, you know, job allocation and working towards better things, because I don't think that money's spent real well.
Okay, yeah, that's exactly what the climate change activists are calling for, which is interesting. Thanks so much for joining us, Tony. Great to hear your perspective.
Thanks very much.
And Danielle, thank you so much for joining us there as well. Tara, you protested in Mudgee, my hometown. What was it like there?
Sorry, it was pretty incredible. Most of the schools, like tons of school kids came out and they were all screaming and protesting it. And Mudgee is actually a very coal mining influenced town. So half, maybe even more than half of the people who live here have jobs in the mines, yet there was a huge turnout. It was quite amazing, actually.
Yeah, well, the interesting conversations there in the main street of Mudgee between people who, you know, worked in coal or their parents do, and the climate activists, or even some of the children of coal miners might be climate activists. Well, there's some interesting conversations happening.
The kids were really interested. It was amazing. They were all screaming for change. It was big support, huge turnout. It was actually incredible.
Yeah, amazing. All right, thanks so much for calling in from Mudgee. What a wonderful town that is in central western New South Wales. Jenna, the first big climate strike was in March, and soon after, Australian people voted at our election, and they voted for the coalition, who had the less ambitious climate policies. Does that show that protest maybe didn't work, or do you somehow doubt that these protests might make a difference?
I think the biggest issue with the election is the fact that maybe Labor didn't have, they couldn't pin down one specific policy and they couldn't cost it out. And also the fact that I think the coalition led from jobs and immediate, people are struggling to hold on to jobs anyway. So jobs in the immediate future is what people are after. Don't forget that probably the majority of those people, especially out here in Perth, I don't think they are current voters, but they will be casting a preferential vote in the next couple of years. So that's probably a short-sighted thing that the coalition will have to look at the next election cycle. But I just think it completely got lost in the mess of taxes, jobs and growth. And I hate to quote Mr. Turnbull on that, but I think that that's what people, when they're inside that polling booth, that's what they're looking for in the immediate uptick in the economy that is bubbling, just barely bubbling along around the nation.
Damien, it's interesting to see this weekend ScoMo is going to be dining with President Trump. Scott Morrison won't be attending the UN climate talks in New York. We haven't been invited to speak because of our coal expansion. Do you think, it sounds like the coalition read the tea leaves right, or at least campaigned very hard in the May election and managed to get up. But do you think that's going to change? Do you think the tide's going to turn soon, or do you think it's going to take a long time?
It's hard to say. I mean, I think it's definitely going to turn. I think the biggest problem is that progressive movements have had trouble selling exactly what it means to transition, like practically an appealing way that we'll transition out of coal and it still be economically viable. These people will still have jobs, and what that will look like. Will they just stop driving mining trucks and start installing solar panels and wind turbines? Like, no one seems to be able to sell this transition successfully, I think.
Dane O'Shaughnessy's joined us. He's from Patagonia. You guys didn't only just let your employees go to the protest. You shut down the shops today.
We shut down our shops and we encouraged our employees to go and join and support the youth climate activists today, yes.
Right. We called some other corporations who said that people actually needed leave to go out and protest, which was a pretty unsupportive take. Do you think you guys actually took a hit at the cash register for this move?
We may have, but it wasn't the thinking about lifestyle certainly wasn't the motivation today. I think, you know, action at the right moment in support of conservation is critical, and we were really proud to be able to give our team the chance to get out there today.
Dane, we just heard Damien say that the progressive politicians have failed to kind of sell the dream on climate change and how the transition might actually work in practice. Do you agree with that point?
It seems to be the case in the last election, but I do believe business has a really big role to play in helping create new opportunities, entrepreneurial opportunities for the future. Mm-hmm. And helping address climate change, from the commercial sector, not just relying on governments to do the work for us.
Yeah, interesting. All right, thanks for joining us, Dane from Patagonia. On the text line, we need to be building nuclear plants, says one person. Tim in Sydney says, seeing so many people of all ages and cultures there for an important cause was amazing, but we know the people in charge won't act. So when is the next one? Well, the next protest will actually be next week. There's a lot of focus on climate at the moment because the UN climate talks are happening in New York. Rosso says, without mining in Australia, Australia would be broke. 13 years in underground hard rock mining has made my family thrive. Mining till I die. Hey, Tom, my name's Aveen, and today I managed to organise the 15,000-plus person strike here in Canberra during my year 12. It is amazing to see how young some of these organisers are. Baden, you're from the Latrobe Valley. What's your point of view on today's climate strike?
So I'm actually a... Hi, Tom, how are you going?
Good.
That's good. So I'm a mechanical engineer in Mitchell Valley, and I know for a fact that if we did lose coal-based power in Mitchell Valley, then the whole area would die. But in saying that, like, we do need to do something about climate change. Like, there's no doubt about it that it's real and it's happening, and the transition period to be able to turn to, like, a solar or wind or something along those lines is going to be really difficult.
I think there are people who've made mistakes in this life. I deeply regret that I did that.
On Triple J.
Let's keep it moving. You're listening to Hack. It's Friday, where you get your say on the big stories of the week. We've got Jenna Clark with you. She's the associate assistant editor of the Western Australian. Damien Power, who's a comedian. Interesting story this week. The poster boy for progressives, Justin Trudeau, has been caught out doing blackface. Not once, not twice, but three times. Yes, it's been a very awkward week for the Canadian Prime Minister, who seems to really love committing to a costume.
Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is asking for forgiveness after images of him emerged in which he had darkened his skin with makeup.
Darkening your face, regardless of the context or the circumstances, is always unacceptable because of the racist history of blackface.
Well, yeah, they're clearly racist images.
It is just jaw-dropping, especially for a man who really is the political brand, is that he is inclusive.
I suspect it will not do as much damage as the conservatives are hoping. It will not do as much damage as the media are playing and making it out to be.
Wearing a brown face, a black face, it mocks race, it mocks people of color. It's really offensive, and unlike Mr. Trudeau, you know, we can't go home at night and rub it off because it was just a party and a good time.
Triple J.
Love to hear your reaction to that story. Is this really damaging for Trudeau? Or maybe, given these images came from 18 years ago and earlier, forgive and forget? Give me a call, 1300 055 36. Comedian Matt O'Kine joins us. He's from an African background. Matt, what do you think of this scandal?
Well, Tom, I reckon you said it all just then. It's from 18 years and before. I mean, look, in Australia, we really only started having a proper discussion about blackface in 2009. That was 10 years ago, you know? And so, I mean, to be a 10 years even before that, and this is something that happened, this is all just a political game that the opposition in Canada are trying to make him look bad. And look, it wasn't the right thing to do, but he's apologised. I personally don't know exactly what else he's supposed to do. He's certainly proven through various political agendas and steps that he's taken during his time in office that those, you know, the idea that he is racist or this terrible person is just not true.
So do you think if someone who had enacted policies that were racist and, you know, some of the actual work that they'd done had disadvantaged people from diverse backgrounds, that's just a whole another kettle of fish compared to something much more, I guess, aesthetic or at least historical in this case?
I'm not trying to say that what he did wasn't a racist thing to do, all right? But I don't think integrally that he is a racist person. I mean, I would take a leader who did blackface once or twice or even three times 20 years ago over someone who's building walls to stop anyone from getting in or who's locking up children in offshore detention. Yeah. You know, so, I mean, like, he can say sorry for something he did 20 years ago. We all do make mistakes. I don't understand what else he's supposed to do. I'm sure if he could go back in time and wipe the makeup off his face, he would happily do that. The other thing I want to know is, right? Why is this only coming up now? He's been Prime Minister for 4 years. How is this only, it wasn't like it was a private photo owned by someone. This is in the school book. People have known that this has happened for the last probably, you know, 20 years. I don't know. It's just obvious political games. It's weak play, and I think it's really pathetic to try and make something out of try and pretend. What I hate, okay, again, about this is when people try to pretend to care about racism when really they're not doing jack about it any other day of the week.
Yeah, interesting point. Thanks for joining us, Matt.
Thanks, Tom. See you next week.
Catch ya, bro. Damien Power, that was something along the lines of what you were saying to me before we were on air about looking at the substance of his opposition leader and when you really weigh it up. The case is kind of clear on those issues around diversity.
That's right, yeah. I think it could be a mistake to put political correctness ahead of systemic change, sort of what Matt was alluding to, that, you know, the conservative leader is opposed to same-sex marriage. He wants to roll back abortion laws, and there's other things that his candidates have said that are far more problematic. So if he got into power, that would be systemically worse for minorities and identity politics than, you know, this historical thing that, you know, he went to too many costume parties. I don't know how many Arabian-themed costume parties there are, but he seemed to go to all of them.
Yeah, he's really leaning into it. Yeah, that's an interesting point, but here's someone on the text line kind of pushing back on that from a different perspective. When conservatives have regrets of the past pulled up, there is no forgiveness. But when the progressive left have regrets pulled up, it's something that happened in the past and not a big deal. What do you make of that point?
Well, this is something in the past and it isn't a big deal. I mean, we're talking about the conservative leader has policies that he wants to put in place that will affect minority people for real now, whereas this is something that happened 20 years ago that affected no one at the time and is now becoming politically hot because of the climate we're in this year.
Yeah, but is there a double standard at all, do you think, Jenna?
I do, and I think the interesting thing is, I think for a long time the tide has been turning on Trudeau, because I was speaking to a couple of business heavyweights in Canada. I don't know why. Don't even ask me why. A couple of weeks ago, and I was shocked with the fact that when he goes to the table to have discussions with business, I was shocked, but also in a good way, because I have never heard a politician be so brazen in the face of people running gas companies and stuff. And he was like, "Yeah, I do have green policies, and if you don't come to the table, I'm not going to make life easier for you." So it's interesting that, like Matt said, it's all coming out now. It's only interesting because the dirt diggers are quickly trying to find something to make this man, something stick against this guy. But it's true. I think the Conservatives, because they are already on that pillar of, well, they hate any type of equality whatsoever, it's hard for them to wash off. But with Trudeau, it's going to be really interesting to see whether he's held up to account, not by what he's done. And don't forget, he's the former son of a prime minister, so there's a certain amount of privilege that already goes with him.
Which he acknowledged.
She does acknowledge. And the fact that whether the Conservatives can just get over this quick headline grabbing, you know, that may flash in the pan, sure, you make international news, but you need to push him on things like economic growth. If people are going to have jobs in the regions and things like that, that would be something that would probably have a lot more success for them at the polls.
On the text line, Trudeau's blackface is the juiciest example of the left eating itself. Amazing, says one listener. Another says, unreal that people are more focused on what politicians have done decades ago rather than their policies. Mm. It was happening from both sides in our election, from both parties. Matt O'Kine was 100% right that this is purely for political gain. I don't know how much political gain's really in this, though, because it's mostly people from the progressive side of politics that really are attuned to these cultural sensitivities around things like blackface. And I don't see how something like this is going to send them from voting from Trudeau to a Conservative candidate.
Mm. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
It might split the vote amongst the progressive side and they might go for another progressive party. But again, I imagine they could form a minority government with Trudeau if it got really tight in the polls. I don't know. On the text line, I don't like Trudeau, but I don't think blackface is racist. There's no negative intent behind it. Sam in Hobart, Jeff says, Trudeau's problems are hilarious. Lol. Another listener says, Trump said, grab him by the pussy, never forget or forgive. Trudeau does blackface. Yeah, forgive that. The modern left. Well, Trump did get voted in after that scandal emerged. Someone else says, Trudeau should be judged on his work. There's plenty of valid questions to ask there.
I was surprised to hear that you had come down to the final two.
On Triple J.
Now for a bit of light entertainment or a D&M about relationships. It could really go anywhere, this conversation. It's a topic that everyone in the Hack office just couldn't help themselves from talking about today, myself included. Almost could say I led the conversation. We're talking about the Bachelor final. The two finalists were pitched by the producers as, on one side, a strong sexual connection with Abby versus lots in common with Chelsea. And we all know who won in the end.
Hack. I just feel like every time I'm with Matt, we have this really strong attraction to each other. In true form, I think Matt and I will have a lot of passion and maybe a bit of dry humping today.
Abby is the kind of girl that we've seen Matt with before.
I don't think that's a bad thing.
So what do you think you have in common with Matt?
What a good question.
On Triple J.
Yeah, I'd love to hear what you made of this. How do you weigh up physical attraction versus, I guess, the more substantial things you have in common with someone? Because you can have all the substance in the world, but if you're not really attracted, it's not going to last. and vice versa. So I'd love to know what you think. What do you make of the result as well? And what's been your experience in your relationships? Give me a call, 1300 055 36. On the text line, I wanted the naughty one to win for once. Amazing how threatened people are by a hot, sexy woman. Natalie, interesting. Love to hear your opinions on the text line as well, 0439 757 555. Jenna, what did you make of the finale?
Oh, well, I have to confess I didn't see it, but
what?
I've been following. I know. Sorry, I was listening into questions. Oh, my
All
God.
All right, let's go to the broader issues. Broader issues here.
I love the fact that obviously the characters or the personas of the women were painted in this way. It's almost like a modern age Madonna whore theory. And I love the fact that Chelsea was chosen. Look, as someone who is like in the twilight of their dating careers, such as myself, you know, a great, great sexual connection is marvellous and it's fantastic. Fantastic, and it's fireworks and great. But, you know, I've already got hip issues, and in a couple of years, that's already going to be an issue trying to, you know, do things like that. So if you can find someone that gets you on every level, whether that be cellular, a spiritual connection, and you just have really good banter, then that's all you need.
But can't you develop banter, and can you really foster a physical connection if it's not there?
Well, I think there is a physical connection there between Matt and Chelsea.
I'm not saying there isn't completely, but if you are to sort of compare those two forces that drive a couple together or drive them apart.
I think it's a lot harder to cultivate substance and an intellectual connection than it is to find someone attractive, and it's called vodka.
Damien, what do you think?
Well, I think someone can become more attractive as time goes on.
Physically?
Physically to you, I think. I was reading about that before I came on air, that apparently the initial physical attraction dissipates, and then over time you find people uniquely attractive through their unique personality and stuff. Mm. So maybe that's the thing. It's a time thing, the physical versus the personality. I don't believe in the one. I don't think there's one person for you. I think that comes from a time when we lived in a village and she literally was the one. It was her or the donkey or whatever. But,
or your cousin.
You know, like, yeah, exactly. So I think there's plenty of people out there for one person, yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's an interesting comparison, like things in a relationship that you can develop versus things that maybe you can't develop. Or do you think, Damien, that you can develop any part of a relationship?
I don't think... Yeah, that's a really good question. I think with the personality thing, I think that's right. It is harder. It's a lot harder, like, you know, to change someone's core fundamental, who they are, and then make that attractive. Whereas I think physically, maybe that can change as you get to know them, and you can become more attractive. So maybe that's the personality one is harder.
Mm, on the text line, forever is a long time to make small talk, unless you're really good at it. Someone else says, you don't absolutely need sexual attraction. There are many people who are or in committed relationships with people who identify as asexual. Lincoln, interesting. Someone else says, everyone said Abby has been vilified. She was genuinely not a nice person. That's based on her actions. The ones that made the edit, that is. Chelsea was by far the most kind, humble, beautiful and genuine person, and that should be the goal. Scotty and Dubbo says, hi, guys. They have to make you tingle, both in life and love. Scotty and Dubbo, laying it down. That's the final word for the program. Good on you, Scotty. Jenna Clark from The West Australian, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you.
Damien Power, great to have you as well. Thanks, mate.
Thanks for having me.
Hack
on Triple J.
Hey, thank you so much for listening to the Hack podcast all this week. Super excited to bring you an interview with Sir David Attenborough on Tuesday. It's just going to be huge. He really has some strong words about Australia's politicians and their lack of action on climate change. So it'll be really interesting to see if that ruffles any feathers in Canberra. Can't wait for that one. I'll speak to you on Monday. Bye.